In this episode, Ryan and I talk about what it's like to be drugged through the noise, off into the weeds, and beaten to death. And maybe, just maybe, it's time to build your own walled garden. And we had fun doing it. Thanks for listening. I remember one time, years ago, a girl, she was an educator, changed careers to become an agent, and within an agency that was trying to embrace infinite banking. And we did little forums, you know, come and present to each other and, you know, philosophize and all that. And at the podium, she said, I think she had a master's, right? And she said, I was insulted at the simplicity of this book. I was insulted at the simplicity of this book. Uneducated, unprofessional, blah, blah, blah. And I was insulted, right? I don't have a master's, I don't have a bachelor's, and I don't have a CFP because I don't have a bachelor's, and I'm not going to go get one, okay? Okay. And at one time, you know, that used to weigh on me, like, oh, you don't have these designations, or I've given up a lot of designations. My whole point here is, she's saying, this is so simple, right? And it's like, oh my gosh, you're jumping over. It is okay to read a 92-page book and embrace the simplicity. Simplicity is a virtue, right? Brevity is a virtue. And it doesn't need to be interpreted, okay? Somebody with a master's or bachelor's or doctorate, they don't need to enter CFP, CHFC, CLU, whatever designations they may or may not have. You don't need an interpreter. If you speak and read English, it's written in English and other languages as well. I believe it's in Mandarin Chinese and Japanese. I'm not sure. I'm just saying, you don't need an interpreter.
They have property rights over there? No, I'm kidding.
Well, more so than the U.S. What are you talking about? Which country were we talking about? And it's okay to read it more than once. I'm just saying, you don't need an interpreter. You're smarter than they're telling you are, and you know this.
Yeah, the sense of shame that the average American consumer has learned from certain political and financial elites really needs to be dropped.
I'm telling you, it's like the thinfluencer and the referrals, you know, your clients. And we get them all, and I don't want to be the Me Too guy. Oh, that happened to me too, me too, me too. It happens so often. James, you know, my best friend, my brother, my mother, my sister-in-law, my dad, my son, whomever, has shown me this. And they work with so-and-so, and whom I may or may not know. But they say that you're the one to work with, you know, it's like so often. And I'm telling you, like, kind of speaking back to, you know, this point in my life, I'm not called to proselytize everyone, never have been. But if you don't care, I don't care. And my work going forward is becoming more and more narrow.
Yes.
Okay. On purpose. I forgot where I was going to go. Though the referrals, right?
Yeah.
So the people, James, you know, I'm going to get licensed, or I just got licensed. I got licensed last week and I want to become an agent. It's like, oh, wait, what does that look like? What does the arrangement look like? Now, I just love everybody and I'm not, you know, I just want to help everybody because I love them so much. Well, why the hell did you go get licensed? That is my question. If you just love everybody, you can give them a book, right? And say, hey, read this book and the second book. And, you know, it's like, my question is, well, why did you get licensed if you just love them? So don't, you know, pee on my leg, tell me it's raining. Okay. And then, I'm saying this specifically, I won't mention any names. Guy calls and says, hey, James, I'm going to get licensed. What does that look like? Will you mentor me or can we work together? And yeah, we'll have another conversation. You know, we'll schedule a call and we'll go over what that looks like. So we have that call and we kind of go over what that looks like. And he goes, oh, well, I've been talking to so-and-so. And what's the pay? I'm like, my God, man, it's like the insurance, it's very narrowly defined what the pay is in the life insurance. And then there's a lot of varying factors, right? Persistency, whatever, production amounts. And it's like, you're going into a bean counting industry. They're freaking bean counters, right? There are so many levels of bean counting that it'll like blow your mind, unless you're a CPA or, you know, a numbers guy or whatever. Okay. We had the conversation. He goes, well, I've been talking to so-and-so, and it's between you or him. And I said, oh, no, you've just made your decision. We're going to part ways because I don't like anything that they do. I don't respect or agree with anything or whatever. No, he's a great guy. I'm like, perfect. I don't know him and I don't need to know him. That's great. You've made your decision. Yeah. And it's like, but going back, it all came down to the pay and the amount of work. And it was like, I just love everybody. Right. Okay. So the fact is, he didn't want to do any work. He just wanted to refer them, right, and get paid. Stay at home. Me a check. And service 2 or 3 years later, are you kidding me? There is no service in the life insurance industry. What? Just call the home office. Okay. And here, wow, James, you have two ladies up front that do nothing but service. They're only part of the 11 that you have here. Why do you have so many people there?
They're just, these people are truly just doing something. And let me say this too. Like, I don't want to get people to get the idea.
I don't even
like,
want to be harsh. I'm not even trying to be harsh.
I kind of do. I don't want people to get the impression like, you know, we're up here on our soapbox. I'll name other names too. Doug Jones, Barry Dyke. There are other great people doing their version of financial strategy who I do not see anywhere near often enough and very much enjoy. And would, you know, if somebody came to me and said, oh, I'm a client of so-and-so, I'd be like, you are a lucky man or woman. Like,
there's probably 10 others that he didn't name.
Sure.
Or 20.
Not
at least 15.
Loads of them, but they are out there.
They are.
Old school. You would regard them as like old soul, old school types.
Deliver. No book. They deliver. They do what they say, and they deliver above your expectations, unless your expectations are unreasonable.
Yeah. They're typically not into this techie stuff, the softwares, all this, the marketing stuff.
Well, how old are they?
Well, I mean, and you don't hear about them online very often. You know, it's, you got to search a little bit. They might have to have a book or something else. And, you know, they're out there though, right? And
they're busy helping their clients.
Yeah, that's one reason they're not doing the online marketing is they're busy writing books and running businesses and investing and doing other activities. Like, that's the other part of it, is that there's this whole, the infinite banking concept is not a type of whole life policy design. It's a lifestyle. There's so much more to this than getting buried in the weeds on this minutia that we're talking about. Now, look, there's, and I've made a point to say that there are differences, and you have always said that structure matters and the company matters.
I can't get off of it because it does, and everybody wants to bastardize. Oh, you're getting lost in the weeds, James. Oh, you're, what are...
I just cannot imagine a grown person telling you that you're getting lost in the weeds. But,
majoring in the minors. That's like, are you kidding me?
This is the kind of stuff we go through, though, and this is the reason. These are the kinds of things that happen that result in this kind of reaction. And then going back to this idea of gaslighting, you know, on the marketing front, people will tell me all the time, you know, that, what do you mean there's no, you know, the education stuff is the marketing stuff. You mentioned this earlier. That's the same thing. That's another one of these battles I'm done fighting. If you think that there is no difference between something like the Mechanic Series and some TikTok channel, then that is on you to sort out in your own mind. I'm done having that. Look, I thought this came to me too as I was pacing around my mud pit of a backyard. You know, like, imagine most people have a favorite childhood teacher. Maybe you don't remember the name, but you might remember the face, or remember the name, but not the face. And there might be like why, there's like a sense of why that person was so meaningful to you. Most people have that.
Sure.
So here's the question. Think of that person in your mind. Okay. Was that person marketing? Oh, no. They were being an educator and a teacher. Okay. So there is a difference. Uh-huh. Yeah. There is a difference between education and marketing. Just like how I distinguish between capitalization and investing. You're not going to find this in Merriam-Webster. I don't care. It's a basic conceptual distinction. Investing means to give up control over capital and on the expectation of receiving something back in the future. Capitalizing means to do the opposite, to purposely retain and maximize control
with
of it.
With a potential of loss.
That's a basic, basic distinction that people who understand English can see and understand that those are meaningfully different things, right? Same type of thing in education and marketing. I don't care what Merriam-Webster says. You're not telling me that Mrs. Jones in fourth grade, who you really liked, was really just a professional marketer, right? That
she was a shill for the colleges.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So here, you want the technical difference? Here's the technical difference. Market, the purpose of marketing is to cause you, the one being marketed to go do something. Usually to buy something, usually to generate revenue for the marketer. But point is, whether marketing is successful hinges on whether or not you or some percentage of people like you do what the marketer wants you to. If you don't, if the number's too low, then the marketing has failed. That's what marketing is. Education is done for its own sake. Education is done regardless of the outcome. You go watch the Mechanic series. I don't care if you become my client. I don't care if you become Joe Schmo's client down the street. You know, I think you'd be served well by me, and I know what would happen here, and so you're welcome to, but the information provided there should be beneficial to you in any context outside of just talking with me. The point of it was for its own sake. And then I brought this up too, and I think this probably triggered some people too. Hey, page 3 of Nelson Nash's book, IBC is not a sales tool for life insurance agents. And then this little fun fact, when Nelson published the book, you'd think, wow, why would somebody publish a book? Oh, it's like a marketing thing, right? Oh, no. When this man published a book, he left the business. He wrote policies for his own family, but withdrew from the broader business when he wrote the book. If you sat down and tried to imagine how somebody could try to communicate any clearer that this wasn't about placing policies or collecting premium, that it was instead about educating people, I don't know what you'd have to come up with. You're going to have to go use one of your favorite AI things to come up with some magical genie image of what that would look like. You can't make it any clearer. IBC is not a sales tool for life insurance. Becoming your own banker is not there to help you sell policies. This is education for its own sake.
And what? You mean he didn't start an IMO before he graduated? What? He didn't start what?
Oh, wow.
Shut up, James.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Okay, so
it's like I have Tourette's, and no disrespect if you have Tourette's and stuff.
Look, I think the startling reaction I get from people when I say things like that, I think that is an indication of just how deep this postmodern epistemology has become of who cares? The data speak for themselves. The numbers speak for themselves. Just where's the higher number somewhere? You know, I did like on the Joe Biden thing. It was, let me just find the higher number somewhere. Where's the ice cream? It's that kind of goldfish mentality, right? No reference to underlying merits or arguments or your human individual purposes. None of that, right? Can't make it too hard on you. Right? This would be too difficult. Right? It's going to gum up the sales process, slow business down.
Let me simplify that for you, because, James, you say simplicity is a virtue. So let me dumb it down for you. Not the same thing.
Oh, and then so here it is. Well, Ryan, if you do that, if you don't have your sales goals, I know the regional vice presidents of life insurance companies make their heads explode. If you don't have quarterly sales goals or annually sales goals or premium targets, how are you going to what's going to happen? I don't know. I have no idea.
Do we need to schedule a quarterly meeting with you, young man?
Oh, my
gosh.
Sure
that you're
an accountability meeting.
What? The bean counters count beans? What?
That whole approach is I'm out on all of it. I was going somewhere deeper with that.
It'll happen. I'll throw you off too. Just give me a minute.
What was there? Oh, man. Well, I'm getting so worked up here because I'm so sick of all of this, you know?
Yeah.
Education and marketing. Difference in education. Yeah. So for people who are not with me, who disagree that there's not a difference between those two things, I'm done trying to convince anybody of it. And I think I put that in the Facebook post that you mentioned. It's like I'm just out. I'm not in that argument anymore. I don't have a dog in that fight.
Watch your views go up on the Facebook post.
Probably. Yeah. Oh, this is what it is. Not being outcome oriented. That's what this is. That's going to sound weird. Oh, sales goals. I don't have any of that. I really don't, y'all. This is, you want to call it faith-based, whatever. I have decided that I am not going to live my life personally, professionally, academically, scholarly, on whatever margin you can think of. I am not going to live my life on some technocratic number crunching basis where we go back and do our accountability. No. And in fact, this gets me to another part on the idea of the financial planner. The Soviet Union did plans. Okay. In America, we have principles, basic ideas, axioms, principles that we can use to make decisions on the margin, one day at a time, one person at a time. Don't need a grand plan. Don't need a five-year plan. Don't need to convince a percentage of the entire American population to do what I think they should. Nope. Just one
more. Sounds like a very ideological United States that we wandered off that reservation.
Yeah. There's the other part of it too. This happens a lot in economics too. Let's say, because like all the whole George Mason crowd, the people who really wish that they could be elected to some sort of government office, that whole branch, it's so common that they'll turn to those stupid qualitative linguistic economists, people who use words to argue, right? We're not using the econometrics and the fancy statistics. Therefore, we must be unsophisticated and basically dumb, right? That's kind of the idea. It's the same idea in conventional finance that, if you're not talking about diversification and, do we have the CFP and what's your portfolio allocation and all that, the illusion of authority and intellectual credibility there is so like, it makes me choke a little. And then these guys that come to me, and I met one of them recently, nice guy. And it's difficult, y'all. It's difficult because these professionals go out and they're very intelligent and they go get the grab bag of the letters after the name. And they say, well, Ryan, you're talking badly about people with letters after their name. Are you saying something personal about me? No, I don't know who you are. I'm not talking about you personally. But listen, if you go suffer through years and years of all those letter acquisition and it never occurs to you that, OMG, these professional financial people aren't even talking about the business cycle. If that thought hasn't occurred, there's a problem.
What is a business cycle, Ryan? I've got a CFP, a CLU, a CFA. What do you mean?
Like, just hypothetically, if there were this thing.
Oh, you're an Austrian. Oh, I get it. You're a libertarian. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just imagine, y'all. Imagine that in health. Imagine it in physical health. Imagine if there were this thing that came around every 5 to 10 years and just made the most sick, just killed off people and made some people really ill. And that just happened cyclically all the time.
I think it started.
Yeah, well, we won't get too far into that, really. Okay, now, so imagine someone goes and gets their MDs. They have a license from the government to tell people what's good for them. And then in all of that, they never, ever mention this thing that cyclically comes around and tends to wipe people out every now and then. Would you look at that MD and say, wow, you're so expert. Let me listen to everything.
Well, how much did they get paid? I don't know. Mm. Or how'd they get their promotions and advancements?
Right. Now, does that mean that particular individual who very naively went and got the medical degree because they thought that if they followed what they were told, that they would in fact be helping people on a medical basis? Does that mean I don't like that person? No, it means I don't know that person. It means that person was in fact naive, and in fact they would be better served by admitting that and correcting their ways. In fact, somebody who has collected the grab bag of letters really has a wonderful basis on which to go present themselves to the market. You can go list out the 85 different ways you were wrong and the 85 different ways that all those major mainstream financial textbooks are wrong, like the one that the Certified Financial Planner Board puts out on the psychology of sales. You might do a little review of that one and say, hey, I went through this. I made this mistake, and I'm here to explain to you what went wrong and what I now do differently. You could, in other words, look at those things as a source of something positive, but no. Many times people want to get defensive. They want to get it, and I appear to be hardcore or whatever. And so we want to, people are out there looking, searching for offense to take.
Oh.
And listen, if I've got anything in abundance, it's some offense for people to take, okay? But I'm not giving it out. They're coming to get it.
They're looking for it.
They're looking for it. And they need to stop. Stop looking for the offense with me.
Now you're going right back to expectations and outcomes.
Because here's another personal failure. Genuinely, my reluctance and unwillingness to establish helpful and appropriate boundaries. And that I have generally not done well at.
Right, I gotcha.
And that's certainly a place for, and I'm not being as nice, that is just like for the letter grabbers, this is my own opportunity is to establish those boundaries. I really don't need to work with everybody or most people or many. I don't. You know?
Sure, sure.
And it's he's just turning away business. I agree with the statement that no business is better than bad business. When I was in your guest room at your prior house in 2019 and decided that, well, what I did decide was I would do this the way that it occurred to me I should be doing it, the way in some sense I feel like I'm called or must do, and I'm going to do it that way. And if I fail and I go bankrupt as a result, so be it.
You're
so be it.
Already close. I'm just saying, not to divulge any private information. I'm not divulging anything you haven't divulged before.
Yeah. So
it's like, it was real. It gets real. Go ahead.
Got real. And and of course, in that very year, that was in January 2019, that very year was the first year that I made enough to pay down a little of the debt that I built up to live on. You know, it finally turned. That was an inflection point.
2019,
January.
When did we meet?
2017.
2017. 2 years.
Yep. I got licensed in August of 2017.
Coming out. Smart young guy.
Of the PhD program. So August of this year would be the full 7 years of having the license. October will be when we met and started, it was either September or October when I started coming out here. And then
it was October. You came down here because I had Nelson here, I believe.
Yes.
Or
yes.
It was October.
Yeah.
So you might have been in California or something in September or August. Love it.
Yep.
No, didn't you go to California and listen to Nelson or no?
Oh, I met Nelson January of 17. January of 17.
Okay. So is that October then?
16. January of 16. I'm sorry. It was January of 16. Yeah,
because
that was in my master's program in Northern California. In the fall of 16, I enrolled at Texas Tech for that PhD program. And okay. I was there from 16 to 17 and October 17.
You know, sometimes, I mean, it's like, I don't want to throw you off track, but, you know, timing and timelines and, you know, 30 years, 31 years, 32 years, 14 years, 16 years, the things that happen in the timeline that they happen, you know, it's good to, like, I mean, you're a writer. You journal. You write. But it's pretty cool important for people to write, document things.
I have about 25 140-page journals at home, completely full. I journal all the time. And had conversations I probably shouldn't have been having with other people who wanted to become agents, one thing I would tell everyone, and it was like just – prophesying. I'm like, people who I've had these conversations with in the past, they don't listen to me, and they don't listen to me because of things I tell them they don't expect. Like, the number one thing you need to do if you want to be independently successful in this business is start writing a lot, because it's formalized thought. And if you're not doing that, if you don't develop your own practice of doing that, then how are you going to develop the ability to think critically? Because the odds are you didn't go participate in Toastmasters, you weren't in mock trial, you didn't go to speech and debate, you didn't go to AP English or whatever. You missed that part where there was rigorous instruction on how to structure your thought. Hmm. And so now, time to do that. If you want to do the kind of thing I'm doing, which if you don't, fine. But if you're talking to me, then time to structure your thought. And one person does some of it that I know who has asked me. So I'm done telling people.
Telling them is different than answering a question, right?
Sure.
Or sharing with them what you do or encouragement.
Right.
So.
No, but I think that you're exactly right. Writing is extremely important. There's just so much more that can be done. And so, like, maybe we're far enough into this now that I can say this won't sound like a marketing pitch. I'm going to start a...
The life insurance agents and the marketers that listen to us to figure out what they want to do next, they've already bowed out because they listened to the first 10 or 15, 20 maybe, then they listened to the end of it. This is where you could really throw out some truth. So go ahead, brother.
No, I'm going to start a subscription-based, I'm going to call it a private seminar. I was going to do like a Patreon or Substack, but come to find out all those companies that everybody knows about are those zombie firms that went and they're like in letter Z of their funding round. You know, they went and got 85 different rounds of funding from investors. I think Patreon.
So they're addicted to that, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Patreon is like a $4.2 billion valuation. It's like, okay, they're just asking
for. They got to have a big number for the next round.
Right. Exactly. Anyway, so all of that. But I have another platform I think I'll use. Anyway. Subscription-based, where I'm just going to go do some of the things that I've been distracted from doing and dealing with the stuff that we've been talking about this whole time. I'm done with that stuff. Some of the forms are going to change. We're going to structure things so that the people who want the educational experience, who want to do what Nelson Nash taught, who for whatever reason are coming to me particularly, they're going to get primary attention. All forms of validation seeking, people who want me to train them as agents, that will be sidelined somehow. And then there will be a premium subscription-based paywall, and it's not going to be like $5 a month, like super cheap, because I don't really care about a bunch of sales revenue. It's going to be what it needs to be so that unserious people don't participate. And that will create, hopefully, and if it doesn't, then we'll make other changes, that will create this troll-free, spam-free, marketing-free, nonsense-free private space where me and three other people can talk about the things I'm interested in. I truly don't care what the numbers are. If we do good numbers, if people do subscribe, great. I will hire an executive virtual assistant and we'll establish a little in-house research department and we'll do more sophisticated projects. But if we don't get there, then we don't get there. I don't care. So that's coming. I don't know when it's coming, but it's coming soon.
It sounds very freeing. I mean, we've talked about this extensively. I mean, you know, over the last couple of weeks or whatever, over the phone, you know, because we haven't sat down. It's like, this is so... I'm proud of you and make it freaking happen tomorrow. Because to me, you know, I mean, two different life cycles here, right? So to me, all of this stuff, what is my work? Mm. You know, what should I be doing? What do I want to do? It's the same thing. You get drug off into this marketing and all of the minutiae from every level, from the financial to the economic to the client to the social media, all of this. And it almost becomes noise that causes you to lose focus of the truth.
Yes, it's distracting.
Very.
It is. It's the noise, siren song, whatever you want to call it. It is the thing over here that's causing you to take your eye off the ball.
So then, it goes back to, you know, what we touched on earlier. Then the real cost is the ones that want to hear,
yeah,
not being able to hear because you're not producing the work, the material is not being created and available or just in existence, mm-hmm. right? It's like that over the paywall, whatever. I've got a million subscribers on YouTube and I've got 300 views over 3 years. Shut up.
Yeah.
But it works.
It works.
See, the influencers, all that stuff works.
Yeah. Somebody got paid somewhere.
It did, but it works short term.
Mm.
Oh, what? And now the SEC is going after all the firms that are using the influencers, but give them time. They'll get around to you, influencer who doesn't have a license to getting paid illegally selling unregistered securities or whatever you're selling.
Yeah.
Give them time. Oh, and then the end result of that, besides all the bad outcome of it, everybody got paid except the consumer, right? Two out of three ain't bad. WC fills, right? The firm got paid. The agent got paid. The advisor got paid, whomever they are, agent, advisor, influencer, whomever, whatever. Oh, and then there's a client, the third person in that arrangement, and Two of them won. One of them didn't. Two out of three ain't bad. You think it's a joke? You think he said black and white movies? You know, is it funny? James, yeah, you know, all comedy is based in, all tragedy is based in comedy. All comedy is based in tragedy. You know, it's real whenever, you know, you kind of mentioned it earlier, and I'm like, Me Too guy. It's like, people say, well, I'm working over here. I did this, but if now I would go work with James, or I'd go work with Ryan. And so these people are calling you, being referred to you, us, by people that have worked elsewhere, right? So they jumped in, they figured out what was going on, then they're exposed to maybe a different side or even more of the nuance of what really goes on in the banking world. And they're like, oh my gosh, I wish I was doing that. How many times? Over and over and over. And I feel guilty myself for not doing some of the work that I believe I'm called to do. Right, because these people come a year later, James, 6 months later, I've done this, and is it all bad? No, it's not all bad. Could they have done better? 100% of the time. But then you can also say, James, well, the people that are absolutely happy and nothing's wrong would never contact you. No, contrary, mo fair. Mm-hmm. So get to the work. I'm sorry. I don't mean to digress. Get to the work.
Yeah.
Put the paywall up. Do whatever.
Yeah. That's coming. And yeah, I'm excited. They're a formalized structure. There's other stuff I want to talk about too. It's things that I do believe are an extension of not IBC per se, but embody the same principles, being long-term oriented, establishing something that can exist in perpetuity. How one might go about doing that, right?
Control beyond
government. The use of a private foundation. What's possible there? What a private foundation even is? What the integration between insurance and something like that, like a foundation, what that could be?
How about churches, ministries, or any other non-profit, not-for-profit, tax-exempt foundation or entity?
Yep.
Oh my gosh, Dave Ramsey's buried in the churches, and it's like schmug. I mean, I'm nowhere near that. I can't stand the schmugness.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Helping, couldn't do any better keeping God's people in bondage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, prove me wrong, okay? Because the market's going to set you free.
Lie.
The market, I'm just saying, what could be done in a tax?
What can be done in tax? What the listener doesn't know is that James and I have discussed this extensively. And because I don't preach what I don't practice, I haven't said more about it yet, but things are underway. But that's just part and parcel, this whole idea. There's more I want to do. There's economics textbooks, things like Human Action, Man, Economy, and State that I want to go through. I know that there's on the Mises.org site, there are these courses. I put them there. In 2013, I was the intern at the Mises Institute who made the independent study courses that you can get on Mises Academy even available. I know they're there. And have gone through many of them. And, you know, I'd like to potentially do my own version.
I want to see the article and all of the, just the one article. It doesn't even have to be all the other data that you spent time, effort, and energy going to a prestigious university to access the Austrian works.
Yep.
Unfreaking published in English.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
100 years later. Yeah. What? And then all of you economists, yeah, I'm going to speak to you directly. All of you Austrian economists going to bitch about other people and all of these things and the Fed, and you won't even publish your own creator's works? I don't understand that. And I don't really care to have a response. I mean, I'm not trying to come at you personally.
It's just odd.
There's something wrong with that.
Yeah.
Wait, I'm an Austrian economist. I'm going to about the Fed till the last day, right? But I'm not going to go publish an original Austrian writer of 100 years that can bring clarity. Maybe there's something in there that they're aware of that would change the narrative that they're griping about now. I don't know, because I only read English. It hadn't been published. I don't know. So, Griggs, come on, get to it.
That's hilarious. It is. You know, Ron Paul recently was on Tucker Carlson's show, and they did the interview, and this is something, I of course, love Ron Paul, right?
That's, yeah, absolutely.
I got into libertarianism and all that, so no shade against Ron, but this always happens with people who do the libertarian thing, right? It's, so what do people do? What do we do? And then the response is, well, you got to be aware, and you got to learn, and you got to understand. And it's like, okay, is there going to be any action anywhere in here? Oh, wait, there is. Political action. You want me to go vote or raise? No. Look, I want individual private action.
Maybe that's a disconnect.
That is definitely that, disconnect.
Maybe that's the disconnect that exists.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Thanks for
because addressing the policymakers, talking to the government, that's prestigious.
Yeah.
That and of to course. Be to be
of course.
To be an antagonist against the state
and recognized as
is,
of course,
there's an identity to it, and especially for like the libertarian types, which I get it, the martyrdom, the I'm gonna go down with the ship type attitude, there's an appeal to some people for that. Never mind that it has nothing to do with actually affecting individual people in their own individual. The most they get to is like, well, you should buy some Bitcoin.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. And some of it's good, okay, have firearms. Yep. Okay. I do that. Basic stuff. Listen, the basic life advice is not going to fully address the economic and financial problems we have. The economic and financial problem we have is that individuals do not have ownership and control over the banking function. That has been outsourced to and given over to, abdicated to the commercial banking system and the Federal Reserve Board. And that we reap the fruits of crickets. That abdication. You get the government you deserve. A people who are...
I'm offended by that.
It's broadly true.
Broadly, yes.
That we get the government we deserve. And when all of the intellectuals, when all of the scholars are all arguing and debating about this national policy A, global policy B, you should tinker with the money supply differently. George Mason's best monetary economist, the big revolutionary idea is we're going to peg money supply creation to national, to a variation of gross domestic product. That's the big, that is what's the saying? Nothing is worse for a good cause than a weak defense. Right? Frederick Bastiat. Yeah. So all of this, pandering to the government. Oh, they need to, what David Stockman. Hey, great. Works for Reagan. Wonderful. What's his big proposal? We need to eliminate the Federal Reserve, a couple of the different Federal Reserve programs. Oh, we're going to do some tinkering with the programs. They're not going to do any more market operations, right? Because if we change the law, well, surely the Fed will follow the law. LOL. In 2008, they went and started fake companies to go buy private assets, which the 1913 Federal Reserve Act explicitly prohibits. They have a documented record of breaking the law, and so the solution is to tinker with. You're going to tinker around the edges. Maybe if they give you a nice big award and like an honorarium, it'll make you feel better. Like
you pay you to go away. Pay you to like what?
I mean, look, if things were different, they'd be different. I'd love to, hop out the window, sprout wings and fly. I'd love for the Fed to not be here and have honest money and no counterfeiting and lending. I get it. Yep. That'd all be really great. Not the world we live in. Not the world we live in. And all of those, very few of those political proposals, none of those political proposals ever suggest that the problem is one of legal contractual control. They're stuck on this technological thing, right? We need to go back to gold. Yeah. Because gold was such a good defense against the current monetary system, right? How'd we end up here? Oh, I see. Oh, people issued claims to gold and then they counterfeited those claims.
What?
Ah, I see. Okay, well, Bitcoin, let's repeat all that and just take out the word gold and put Bitcoin in. Not paper. We need something digital that is algorithmically pre-programmed to have a fixed supply, so to speak, let's say, for the sake of argument. Fine.
So to speak, let's say, for the sake of argument.
So it's not,
So it's not a synthetic paper. Now it's some code, right? So we've gone from something.
But it's decentralized.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. What is to stop a bank, a commercial organization, from issuing claims to the underlying asset just like they did with gold and silver? Maybe the problem of the business cycle, as the Austrians understand it, it has very little to do, incidentally has something to do with the particular physical makeup of the asset. People love to say, oh, gold is divisible and it holds its value and you can store it and it doesn't change. All the different things that Aristotle talked about. Look how great. Yeah, yeah, fine. Incidentally interesting to explain the historical development of the use of gold as money. It has nothing to do with preserving contractual control at the individual level over the money supply so as to prevent counterfeiting, because that has nothing to do with what the particular physical thing is. It has everything to do with what happens with credit. With lending, who has the right to lend? What are the internal mechanics of the lending process? That is what affects the money supply. The money supply is not made up of just base money. If Bitcoin were suddenly the money, it's not. If it were, it might be the base money, actual bona fide money. However, as Austrians have said for a very long time, the money supply consists of money and perfect money substitutes. What are perfect money substitutes? Well, nowadays, that's like checking accounts, demand deposits. That's not US dollars. That's an account that you have in a bank. You don't own it. We won't get into it. But a demand deposit is a perfect money substitute for actual base money, which is Federal Reserve notes. Why is that the case? Because when a merchant receives your payment from your checking account, they regard the transaction as finally settled. The exchange is done. The money, the thing exchanged, has facilitated the transaction. That's what money is, the general medium of exchange. And so something that serves that purpose generally throughout the given jurisdiction, in for us, the US, or globally, demand deposits meet that essential action-based definition. And so the true money supply includes both base money and everything else that people use as money. If Bitcoin were the money, there would be base money, and then there would be all the perfect substitutes to money that all the same financial institutions all issue, right? Doesn't matter what the underlying money is. They're going to issue a claim to it, rehypothecate it, leverage it, sell it, and pass it around. And all the same freaking things that happen with the money supply will happen over again. And then it won't be Bitcoin. What will it be after that?
Conch shells.
Like salt. Mythical like spirits. Whatever. Or something. I don't know. You know?
Holographic
this,
photos.
It plagues. This problem plagues the entire economics profession. The obsession with the physical technological manifestation of a thing. Right? It's very common. Like, so in capital theory, right? Capital is the produced means of production, the physical things we use to make other stuff. No, it's not. Capital, for a very long time before the economists imported that made up definition, capital was the money value of property in a business context. That's what capital was. And by the way, still is.
Who imported that?
Adam Smith is primarily responsible for it.
Yep.
Because he took the physicalist tech, and then everybody, oh my God, Adam Smith, oh my God, who's your favorite? Adam Smith, my favorite. You know, the GMU guy, the Adam Smith programs. These people, they're telling you what they're coming. All you have to do is go read. That's the problem. People don't go do the reading. And of course, they're busy. I get it. But yeah, that's what we're steeped in. And then so someone comes around and says, all the kinds of things we say, and then, oh, shock, oh my gosh, and
It sounds to me like your 2 weeks of roller coaster riding, you didn't really have the opportunity to get deep into economics. And so I'm glad that the platform is here and available to you to give an economic lesson. I mean, seriously. It's like,
I am too. And that's, yeah, this is, and for this, and
we're supposed to be talking about life insurance and selling.
Right. Are these guys agents? Or what?
Yeah. We're marketing life insurance. Don't forget. Funnel.
Click, like, subscribe, sign up, email him.
Oh my God. So he's controlling the banking function. Oh my gosh. What are you talking about? No, that was awesome.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Is like, I had no intention of talking about any of that at all. And it just kind of comes up and it's like a incidental side thing. No, that should be the stuff that I'm doing.
Yes.
And that's, it shouldn't the order.
This
is
an example of why that work needs to be done.
Yes.
No question.
Yeah.
No question. Because whenever you don't get thrown off, distracted, I drug out into the weeds and beat to death. And do I need to bring clarity to that?
That is exactly your, yeah. We need to build a garden with a nice, big, beautiful wall
right
around the garden.
So we can't get drug out into the weeds and beaten
yeah.
by, you know, whomever.
Yes. And to keep the barbarians at the gate.
Right.
Outside.
And there is a gate.
Yes.
And there's a toll taker at the gate.
Yeah.
And it's a limited access, limited entry.
And you control.
Oh, my gosh.
When it opens.
Yeah. That's a great example of, I mean, there's some works, because I'm not the academic, you know, I mean, you're the academic, my daughter's an academic, you know, my wife is an academic in pseudo academic, not even a pseudo academic. She's an academic in disguise. She's really an academic, but she doesn't present as one. I am not the academic, right? But I appreciate the skilled academic, right? In a topic that I have interest in.
Yeah.
Right. So I was told, I don't know if you were there or not. I know I shared it with you. Sometime back, James, there's nobody in the infinite banking world that even talks about Austrian economics, but except on the Bank of Life podcast. I'm like devastated. My feelings are hurt. I'm like, you're kidding me.
Yeah.
Right. So what the hell are we talking about? Oh, I was going, I was digressing. I'm going to go back now. Okay. Okay. I know this was way back when I was like, oh, I need to quit. Because I lost my train of thought. I was going down a road. There's a robust field of material to talk about with this particular individual that goes way back. And this is where it came. He told Nelson early on, while Nelson's a big promoter of Mises, right?
Mm.
And he told Nelson in almost a reprimanding way, like, what does Austrian economics have to do with banking? What is banking?
Yeah.
The infinite banking concept. What does banking have to do with life insurance kind of a thing? You know, and this is just another variation of that. It's like, my God, if you can't properly classify things, you're going to be lost. Period.
Yeah, that attitude hasn't gone away.
It has not.
No. In fact, it probably just flourished in Nelson's absence, which is sad. He used to tell at the start of his seminar, he would talk all about his experience with Leonard Reed, founder of the Foundation for Economic Education, the first liberty-oriented nonprofit think tank in this country in the modern era, predated Mises.
Brought Mises over.
Leonard Reed and Henry Hazlitt responsible for getting Mises from Europe over to New York. That was a core central element of what he taught. And from a lot of guys who will occasionally say his name, it's almost as though you wouldn't ever know it.
You know what I get sick of hearing is, typically it comes from agents or people sometimes who like want to appear to be or want to sound to be as if they're in the know, and they go on and on. And I've even seen it written, you know, it's like how much of a libertarian Nelson was.
Uh-huh.
Like, you may be confused of Austrian and libertarian. I mean, yeah, but, you know, Nelson was such a libertarian, all these great libertarian ideas, the infinite bank comes up with, oh, it's libertarian. It's like,
people conflate the two all the time.
Is that it? Mm-hmm. So, because they didn't listen to Nelson and come up with that.
People consistently conflate politics and economics. I think the two are the same thing. And that's because a lot of economists talk about politics. And so they think that, they must be the same. Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
Political economy. I mean, that's the term that is used to describe the academic discipline. And the reason for that, by the way, is if you branch off economics as a distinct branch of science, well, then you encounter unpleasant things like having to specify the methodology and the epistemological priors. Like, where are you coming from? Like, what's the structure of this field of inquiry? No one wants to have that discussion because that won't get you hired and you won't get tenure and you won't get that published. And,
oh my gosh.
You know, can't go get a new job at the next government school. Oh, okay. I work for a private school. Yeah. What do the kids who go there use to pay to get there?
Oh, government loans? Oh, okay.
The curriculum is not influenced by government. Hey,
by the way.
Are you kidding me?
Were all those loans inflationary? That's lit. It would be a little funny if all the economists who decry inflation are themselves getting paid with debt that is inflationary.
What?
That would be a little too perfect. Yeah. This is the state of the world we're in. And the beautiful part is that the answer is just right here. Just right. You don't have to deal with any of that. You just have to get out of the swamp.
Apparently it's appealing to jump in and waller around in that and deal with it sometimes.
There's a lot. There's big money and big distractions.
Oh, hell yeah.
And why? Well, because it pays. It pays. People are getting paid to carry those, you know, $25 trillion or whatever it is now in publicly traded equities.
What?
Yeah. Oh, this is my favorite one. Funny enough, how no one ever brings this up, right? Because I used to say, you know, conventional financial advice doesn't have an answer for the business cycle. It's called sequence of returns risk. You don't know if there's going to be a recession or depression before, during, or after the time when you start taking distributions, so you don't know what the future value is going to be. And so then the response would be like, oh, wait, we have algorithms. And what the algorithms will do is, as you get older, we'll just automatically reallocate away from stocks into bonds.
Oh, my gosh. Target date funds. Is somebody actually giving you that response?
No, I'm steel manning. People don't respond. No, this is me. This is like
steel manning.
This is like the best form of response I could see coming.
Oh, okay.
Although I have had individual people what if?
Yeah.
I would just.
They say that in so many words.
Right.
Yeah.
This is a general idea that's out there. And of course, those conversations that happened before the Fed recently hiked interest rates faster than ever before in recorded history, and bond values took a kick in the teeth. So the thing that was supposed to be your principal protection there in that publicly traded market suddenly wasn't so principal protective.
What?
Oh. Hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank goodness I wasn't taking income yet. I'm still, you know, I'm a T30, target date 30. I have 30 years to retire, so I'm heavily weighted in equities. And you know, look at the market; it's going up anyway, so it didn't affect me.
Yeah.
And I'm young enough to recover anyway. You know, I've got 30 years to retire. And I'm just going to dollar cost average into it anyway. So,
I wonder how much more time all that dollar cost averaging will buy you when the same thing happens again when you're 80.
What? Huh? And I'm heavily weighted to bonds because I'm protecting against a sequence of risk, return risk. I'm going heavily into bonds. Well, they're not going to do that again. Interest rates are not going to all of a sudden go up that much again.
Ah.
What? The inverse relationship between bond values and interest rates. Oh, damn, you're trying to be all economical and you know, hermeneutical.
Fear, uncertainty, like, doubt.
Yeah. Fear, uncertainty, doubt. Yeah, let me make stuff up. And I'm gonna talk long enough to make it sound like I know something, mm-hmm. and you'll be okay, right? Yep. Don't do anything. Nothing. Don't move. Like, my God, and for sure, whatever you do, don't pay a big old life insurance premium. Are you kidding me?
Man, this has been cathartic. I feel better.
Let me tell you what, we were talking for like an hour and a half before we ever turned the cameras on. I'm like, my gosh, man. So we didn't repeat a dang thing. I'm just telling you.
No.
It was good. It's we should sit down and talk more often. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe I haven't laughed this much in a podcast in a dang long time. I think the correlation to me is I need to go back to France. It's like, that's the... Yeah.
I'm excited. I'm excited for what's going to come. It's a challenge for. It'll be a challenge for me to follow through and to enforce these new revelations. But I'd certainly feel more motivated than ever after the last couple of weeks.
I see. So just for the listener, Ryan is, at the end stages of the work on his book. All right, it'll be published sooner than later. Not too soon. It'll be just right on time. Okay. And I know all of y'all are patiently waiting. I've got the order on the first case. But let me say that, you know, he's still has his PhD work in front of him. Right, so he's been working on the book. He's done the mechanic series. He's done a lot of work, and he's in business, right? He talks to clients every day, prospective clients. I'm just saying that he is, you know, finishing the book, and then the PhD, which is a vitally important work, in my opinion. I'm very encouraging to him. Right, there is no economist. This does not exist. All right, there's no Austrian leaning economist. There's no economist from the Chicago School or any other school of thought with economics. There's not a single economist that I'm aware of, so I could be wrong, that understands life insurance. Now, there's not a single PhD economist that understands life insurance and understands the infinite banking concept and can convey the power of the infinite banking concept and can write and speak. Okay. So I'm very encouraging him to do these things. So, and let me say, I'm encouraging this idea that he can separate himself from the noise to focus on, put the guard up, build the garden, put the gate up, to focus on these things like some obscure paper that we may have never heard of, right? But it may be interesting to hear him go through, right? So I'm just saying, get to it, right? I'm just being encouraging that I can't wait for all this to happen. And then, you know, as a for the sake of, you know, appearing to be me too, that's very attractive to me, because I have been so distracted in doing these things and that thing and this thing and this thing and filling these fulfilling commitments that either real or perceived, you know. And it's like, no, what is the value of your work? What is the value of my work? I don't know, but it's valuable to me, so I want to do it. So I'm just saying, when I say go, lead the way, show me how, brother, because I'm going to be right behind you. All right. So.
I appreciate it. And the encouragement's very helpful. And it's, you know, it's for our people, you know, it's for the remnant. I believe in that idea. And
by God, it's biblical, it's true. And if you don't understand it, you should learn about it, my opinion.
Yeah. The one, and I will admit that I'll get distracted and, you know, that the thinking about, oh, the numbers or how many people, doesn't matter.
You know, Nelson and I'm not to speak for, I don't speak for Ryan. I don't speak for Nelson. I just share my experiences and our conversations. And okay. I don't know how many books were thrown at Nelson, manuscripts, right? To like read and proof. And he shared a lot of them with me, and he would even, okay. He was always full of grace. Okay. Always full of grace. The conversations that we would have might be on a manuscript and why they might be writing and whatever, whatever, whatever. But it always got down to why. Why are you writing a book? Why? Why is the author writing a book? Why?
Yeah.
And, it was very important to think through that process of why.
Yeah.
You know, I did get a commitment out of Nelson that he would write a forward to a book if I wrote it. And then, by God, I drug it out long enough that it won't happen in this lifetime. Anyway, so. But why? I think that's important, is why. The remnant. It could be for posterity. It could be for you just getting it out. Right? Getting what you.
I feel like I have to. Like, I think that there's just, knowing now what I know about how the ways that things can go wrong, and having made many of the same mistakes myself early on, it's like, it would have been really nice if this was just available earlier. And I don't know, like, I feel like you've shortened my learning curve by, I don't know, lifetimes. And so maybe some of that can pass on to other people who also want to shorten the learning curve. And if they do something with it, great. And if they don't, then fine.
Whatever. You
know? I look forward to working with the ones who, the few who resonate, you know, who don't want just more of the same. You know, is it when is enough enough, man? I mean, is the, so that that big finance marketing strategy, that's just worked out so well, huh? Individual, the individual average American financial strategy is just so robust and so secure against unexpected losses in value. And people generally don't find themselves without access to capital, right? There's always plenty of money to go to the next generation when we inevitably pass. Yeah, no, no. So my suggestion is that maybe you just put all that down. Just put it down and go back to it. It ain't going nowhere. Trust me, it's not going anywhere. It'll be right there waiting for you.
It'll be a whole nother gin. It'll be new and improved by the time you pick it back up.
And you've spent 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years swimming around in that. So maybe take, I don't know, a weekend, just one for a little tiny bit of balance, and consider what becoming your own banker even means. That just in the, for the sake of fairness, and not even completely. You don't have to spend as much or the same amount of time, effort, and energy. Spend less, spend far less, and then you can go right back to all that noise. And turn, you can have CNBC on mute in the background if you want. Just take a little bit, you know.
You know, those, some of those players back in the day, which I don't watch TV at all, but I used to way back in the day watch those financial programs, give you all the propaganda. You know, I don't know, so you can't prove it, but I've heard multiple times from independent, separate people, sources, that some of those guys on there pay stupid amounts of life insurance premium.
Oh, I believe it.
Hawking the
y'all
the
just markets. go ahead and look up what finances the Federal Reserve Board of Governors retirement package.
Oh, what? Hmm. What? Life insurance contracts? Hmm. What are you talking about? Hmm. I'm sure they're with you know, IULs and whatever.
No, nope, but
okay.
Do what you're told, not what you see.
Oh, that's right. Mm. All right, what else, young man? I've had fun. That went a long time.
Yep. You said you wanted two, and I am here to deliver.
Need two parts, right? I'm like playing the algorithm, playing the numbers games on YouTube. I'm kidding. We're out of, like, been traveling. It was great.
Playing the calendar game.
Playing the calendar game. That's right. Yeah, all right. Any parting words? You know, there's a new restaurant local.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.